Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, Sam caught him. It's a Gatorade war on the sideline.
The Cincinnati Bengals were the last team to lose in the regular season. They won their first six. They're the last AFC team to lose in the total season. AFC champions. En route to Miami in the Super Bowl. 21-10 over Buffalo.
Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
That's who you have up until noon today. Nick Shepkowski, Anthony Herron on an hour brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com.
And now kicking off hour number two. We're here with you until noon here in Chicago, but have the pleasure, the honor, being joined by one of the best football voices in the industry, a guy who's been at it for quite some time. You can find him on Twitter at Solomon's Wisdom, and we recommend highly that you find it there to get all the football knowledge you can gain from Solomon Wilcox, our guest here on 670 The Score. Solomon, how you doing this morning, man?
Hey, Anthony, doing great. Great to be on with you guys this morning.
I appreciate you making the time to do so. Love to start here in Chicago and then just kind of branch out league-wide, nationally from there a bit. But the big news in the city the other day, as we've been watching this Bears offseason play out, and Nick and I were just talking in the last segment about the transactions and trying to free up cap space, receiver, Taylor Gabriel, corner, Prince Amukamara. And we know the Bears' strength has been on defense here in recent years. And while Prince's interception numbers have never really been stellar consistently throughout his career, but he was a guy kind of the tip of the spear for the Bears' defense, just that in-your-face corner that would force receivers to have to reroute. The Bears right now, they've drafted a lot of defensive backs in recent years, but I don't know what they do to try and replace that. For not having a first-round pick, does it seem more feasible that they go into the draft for a guy? Or, you know, Trey Roberson, the guy they signed from the CFL, what do you think makes sense for a defense that does, you know, they've got a championship window here where it feels like they can maybe continue executing at a high level?
Well, you and I both know when it comes to team building, the best way to go typically when you're looking to impact any area of your football team is you try to address it through both, through free agency and the draft. Now, if you feel like you're cap heavy as a football team, then you're going to address it strictly through the draft because you and I both know the players are more cost effective there and they can still get on the field right away and hopefully make an impact there. Free agency is a very expensive way to go about improving your team. And clearly this is a move with Prince Amukamara where it's purely about the finances because he is a really good football player, but they have to spend money on other areas of the team. And so they feel like they can allocate it elsewhere, maybe get a greater return on the investment by maybe drafting a player at that position.
Solomon, so much of it, I don't always like the argument or the discussion going back to quarterback, but when you have what the Bears situation is, which is not a ton of cap space, not a whole heck of a lot of draft capital, and a quarterback that you don't like from what you've seen at the NFL level so far, how do you kind of attack that knowing that your offensive line is less than ideal, knowing that your running game is less than ideal, and that in a game where you're seeing tight end become more and more and more important, you're getting next to no production out of right now?
Isn't that something? Because if the plan really had worked for the Bears, in other words, they had a great plan. The quarterback is still on his rookie deal. They're up against the cap, having spent draft capital and trades for Khalil Mack and other moves that they've made. But if the quarterback was just performing well, this wouldn't even be a problem. Like, if he was doing what they had expected from him, they would be sitting in a great position. Because what? He's a physical quarterback. He's mobile. You can run the RPOs. You can run a lot of the read option stuff with the quarterback. And if Mitchell Trubisky was playing up to the level of maybe expectation, this would all be working. They're still good and talented on defense in every single area. They just didn't come up with all the interceptions that they had come up with in 2018. But this is about Mitchell Trubisky improving. If he makes the jump this offseason that we thought he would make last year in the offseason or during the 2019 season, all is good in Chicago. If he doesn't, now all the what-ifs you just talked about, we need this, we need all these – because really, he impacts their running game as well as their overall passing offense. He's mobile enough to impact the running game in a way, not maybe at the level of a Lamar Jackson, but certainly at a level where they would be more efficient in the running game, less reliant on the running backs. And I think David Montgomery is very good. Tariq Cohen, we know, can be productive. They'd be better if the quarterback was good in the RPO game, good in the run option game. So this is really about Mitchell Trubisky being the player that lives up to expectations. And if he does that, then this roster works. If he doesn't, then I think it exacerbates many of the holes that we just talked about.
What lessons can we glean from the Super Bowl matchup and the way that played out? Because we talked about that a lot here in the city with Andy Reid being Matt Nagy's mentor at multiple stops and the Chiefs going on to the Super Bowl, Andy Reid finally getting one, and then Kyle Shanahan having, you know, had the success he'd had as an offensive coordinator in multiple destinations, most notably in Atlanta before that with the Super Bowl run that the Falcons lost. But then now as a head coach taking a different approach and leading San Francisco to a Super Bowl, but the approach of the two offensive systems and really the two defensive systems, very different between those two squads. Are there lessons that a copycat league like the NFL can kind of take from that, and certainly here in Chicago that you would think Matt Nagy and the Bears should look towards?
Yeah, Anthony, I think more specifically, the copycat or maybe the takeaway for Chicago, considering you've got Matt Nagy, you've got, you know, the same offense, right, at least in terms of scheme that the Chiefs are running, is that we already know Mitchell Trubisky is not Patrick Mahomes. So that in and of itself doesn't even allow you to think that you can have the same exact offense. But I do think you can learn in that, listen, you've got to put speed at the wide receiver position. You've got to be able to threaten. You've got to be able to put together your wide receiving core almost like a basketball team. You can't just have every receiver be the same. Now, they all got to have great speed and be able to win one-on-one. So that means you need a vertical stretch guy, Tariq Cohen, right? You need a really good tight end who can kind of work like a wide receiver, who can post up in the red zone and win like a Travis Kelce. Then you need a possession guy that can go and get you the ball like Sammy Watkins. It's still what we call a 50-50 ball guy, but still create yards after the catch. You need diversity of skill set, but the one thing they better all have is speed to win against one-on-one matchups and the ability to give you a mismatch depending on who you want to go to. I think that's what you could take away from the Kansas City Chiefs, because they were able to do something that I didn't think was possible. Beat a team that ranks top five in pass rush, which is what the 49ers brought to the table, and a team that ranks second overall in RPFF grading in coverage. That's why the 49ers dominated for 3.5 quarters of the game, but then the dam burst in the fourth quarter, midway through the fourth quarter. Mahomes got going. They isolated in coverage. They started moving him out of the pocket where he made plays, and his receivers were able to shake loose for even bigger plays, and they scored touchdowns on three consecutive possessions. For the most part, defense was winning the championship for the 49ers until the midway point of the fourth quarter. I think that's where the examination of what the Chiefs were able to do really separated themselves. And I think that's the takeaway if you're the Chicago Bears. In those ways, you can begin to build an offense that looks different than what you have now.
Solomon Wilcott's our guest here on 670 The Score in Chicago on Twitter at Solomon's Wisdom, breaking down the Bears and the NFL at large with Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. And Solomon, with the work you do with Pro Football Focus, you're referencing PFF there. I was curious for, you know, like PFF, to my knowledge, throughout Mitch Trubisky's career, has never really been just that fond of him overall, hasn't rated him that high, regardless of the results. And that's one of the cool things about PFF, is that you guys have the ability to go beyond just the statistical margins that coaches, that quarterbacks, that players will have. But for quarterbacks around the league, I made a comparison of guys like Josh Allen, certainly MVP, Lamar Jackson, even Jimmy Garoppolo, who had offensive systems that moved the pocket a lot, that I thought took pressure off the QB to have to win consistently from the pocket as they develop from where they're at right now. Are there familiar refrains you've seen in recent years in working with PFF for quarterbacks developing? Now, Mahomes is kind of a space alien, but for quarterbacks developing in the league, is there a familiar refrain you see that perhaps Bears should look to Matt Nagy to start doing more of with Mitch Trubisky in his development?
Yeah, you know, that, you know, it's a very easy question, to be honest with you. I know most people, you know, we think that data analytics makes things more complicated. In reality, no, it doesn't. I mean, I think it just makes things more clear. It gives you tools to which you're able to see exactly not just who's productive, but why they're productive and when they're productive. Like in situations, some quarterbacks are better on third down than others. Some are better inside the red zone. Some are better in the final 2 minutes of each half. If you're good at final 2 minutes or final 4 minutes at the end of first half and end of each game, you're going to win a lot of games. Now, maybe your numbers don't show that you're better overall, but you're better in critical situations. You and I both know that translates into playing winning football. The real critical thing to your question about Trubisky, even if they're doing more RPOs and particularly play action pass game, it's the thing that has made a quarterback, say like Jared Goff, who may not perform well in other areas, but in that area, he's got an arm that can drive the ball down the field. It creates better reads for him downfield and more definable situations when it comes to coverage. Against play action pass, what does it do? It buys you more time deeper in the pocket and buys the receivers more time to get downfield. And the coverage declares itself immediately. So now you're not reading complicated coverage schemes, and you're pretty much throwing to open guys against play action. So play action, what? You go play action, either the shot play is there or it's not, right? And if it's not there, you tuck it and take off, run with it, or you check it down. That's simple football. But with Kirk Cousins, say, in Minnesota, it was the thing that turned around his season in 2019 and made him one of the highest graded quarterbacks and allowed him to have, what, 27 touchdown passes, minimized his interceptions where he had only 7 on the season. And he had a much better year this year, won more games, and everything clicked for them. And so I think you could find that if you did that for Trubisky, I think you would see his production improve.
Yeah, you mentioned Cousins, and the biggest throw he made in that first-round wild-card game against New Orleans comes on those exact circumstances. While we're on quarterbacks, what makes the most sense? Which destination makes the most sense for the free agents to be? And Philip Rivers, who the Chargers have no interest in keeping around, and if the Patriots decide they're officially going to move on from Brady, where's the landing spot that makes the most sense for both of those?
Well, let me just say this about Brady. The best landing spot for Tom Brady is back in New England. I think he knows that. I think Patriots know that. This is about Tom just getting his money. He's been the 18th highest paid quarterback, at least in 2019, right? I think just below Andy Dalton at around 18 mil, something like that. But he wants $30 million. He's looking up and says, Jared Goff's getting 30. Carson Wentz getting 30. Russell Wilson getting 30. Dak Prescott is turning down 30. Tom Brady knows that's his floor. But the Patriots have been reluctant to pay the great Tom Brady the market value, looking to do all kind of other side deals or whatever. But so he says, look, I'll bet on myself. I'll hit the market. And now we see that the market would pay Tom Brady, even at his age at 42, they'd pay him $30 million. So the Patriots are going to match that. Trust me. Patriots are going to give him that money. He knows that he doesn't have to learn a new system going elsewhere. Secondly, if he were to leave, that's where the dominoes would reshuffle a lot of things, because I think the Patriots would look to two quarterbacks, Andy Dalton, and they look, I think, to Ryan Tannehill. Two guys who can do those things we just talked. They can drive it on play action, and they can manage ball games. And I think that's all Bill Belichick would be looking for. There is no doubt. All the other guys, like, I don't – in my mind, there's no market for Phillip Rivers. People are throwing out names. Phillip Rivers can't move in the pocket. Phillip Rivers can't buy extra time. And if you don't have a great offensive line, he can't stand in the pocket and make plays. I even doubt if he can drive it down the field. But everything has to be perfect for Phillip Rivers to continue to be an impact player. He was on a good team in San Diego.
Yeah.
And he did not perform well in 2019. If you ever need enough evidence to say, okay, this is what it looks like when a quarterback, he's just gotten a little too old and he can't move anymore. This is what it looks like. He cannot move anymore. And quarterbacks who cannot move in today's NFL, they are a liability, not an asset.
Shep and I haven't gotten to the NFL labor negotiations yet. We're going to do that a bit more later on our show today. But for you as a guy who, you know, played in the league and follow things as closely as anyone, I know for me, I'm looking at what the benefits are to retired players and some of those things. But it felt like the ownership side of things did a nice job PR-wise and kind of put their message out and made folks feel like a deal is close. And, all right, you know, ball's in the player's court right now. And it seems like the players have said, nah, let's pump the brakes on that a bit. What are your expectations for how things play out with a year left to go on the deal? But obviously, if it doesn't happen this offseason, then the clock really begins to tick on labor negotiations.
Yeah, Anthony, I'll say this because I look at it from both sides. As a former player, you know, I see current players every day, and I tell them, I say, take care of us old guys now.
Right.
You got to take care of us old. And I told them, I said, now, you know, you're not too far off from being one of us. You know, for every current player, you're just a step away, a stone's throw away from being a former player. So make sure your older self thanks your younger self. So, but no, I think we're really close. You're right. I think the PR job sort of overinflated the optimism. Okay, but here is the deal. Current players, their great concern is this 17-game deal. And the numbers, this was the first offer by the owners. The players are smart enough to know that. Even the executive council is smart enough to know that. That's why they came back and said, we're not even going to send it to you. Okay, because we can do better. And guess what? They can. Now, they're not going to get a higher percentage of the designated gross revenue. I think 48.5 is about where you're going to get. So I don't think that's a sticking point. I do think the rate of return for 17 games, that's a problem. The league can automatically give us more postseason games without going to the CBA, without going to the players to vote for. They can do that. You and I both know players get paid less per game in the postseason than they do in the regular season. So the value in terms of television contracts with more postseason games goes up exponentially. So the money is already there, okay, for salary cap and for the growth of the game. You've got it right there, because two additional postseason games, that's large money for owners. And the owners can do that without the vote. So that's real good. The 17th game, they need the vote. They're going to move a preseason game to regular season game. Players want equal and fair compensation because they know they're playing postseason games for less money. Well, they're not going to play a regular season game for less money. So if you're talking about $200,000 per player for a regular season, that's not going to fly. And that's why J.J. Watt could come out and write, say, it's a hard no. Because he already know they were kicking that back. And so I don't think it was irresponsible for him to do that. All he was doing was setting the record straight because, you know, the PR machine for the NFL was out in front of them. So I think they're going to go back to the table and they're going to tweak that. And if they can do that, then I think they're going to have a deal. You're right. They got a year to get it done. Lastly, I'll say this. For us old guys, the 17th game is important because to have that, you're going to have owners kick in vast sums of money into the legacy fund, which helps fund our pension. And so if you're a former player, you want that 17th game. If you're a current player, I could see where you would say, I don't want it unless we get fair and equitable compensation. And they're a long way off from that, at least on the issue of 17 games.
Solomon, awesome stuff, awesome insight, especially to the labor talks right there from a perspective that you're able to offer. Appreciate you taking the time this morning.
All right, guys. Hey, keep up the good work, and thanks for having me.
Thanks, Solomon.
Solomon Wilcots, Pro Football Focus, NFL Network. He has to deal with you on a regular basis, too, which he needs to get a raise for that. Forget the NFL negotiations.
A little hazard pay, perhaps. Yeah.
Exactly. I want to get into that a little bit. I think it was a huge story this week that got a lot of attention. I haven't heard what you had to say on it. The 17 games, seven playoff teams aside in the NFL. We're going to get into that a little bit. Take your telephone calls on it as well. 312-644-6767. Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron with you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back in. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Top of the hour, bottom of the hour right now being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. They host the Rockford Ice Hogs 3 p.m. today. First 2,500 fans receive a Wolves retro lunchbox courtesy of ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call. If you have thoughts on this, we just finished up a conversation with Solomon Wilcots, and towards the end of it, did a lot of Bears there at the start, went through the Bears, went through Trubisky, went through the quarterbacks, the free agent quarterbacks, free agent plans, all of that, but towards the end, we got to the labor negotiations and what the future of the NFL may look like in terms of a 17-game schedule and also in terms of the playoffs expanding from being six teams aside, six teams in both the AFC and the NFC, to instead seven teams, and why the owners would be interested in that. Well, surprising to no one, it's all about money. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I know that's what's going to win, is the money that will be made. And why would you dare to want to have a seventh playoff team in the NFL? Well, even if it is the 8-8 Steelers that have Donald Duck playing quarterback for them at the end of this last year that can't put up more than 10 points a game, it's a game that a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans nationwide are going to tune into. A lot of football fans nationwide are going to tune into after you make it a triple header on Saturday and a triple header of games on that Sunday. Okay, I can see that it's probably going to happen, but you know what? I still don't want it to. I could not be more against this for various different reasons. Yeah. It's just rewarding the mediocrity and watering down the playoffs and what it means to get to a postseason. I think it's too widespread in every other sport, and baseball is the one real exception. But why take it a step in the direction of getting closer to what the NBA does, what the NHL do, in that, oh, over half the teams in your league are making the postseason? NFL wouldn't quite be there yet. They'd be knocking right on the door of it with this expansion.
The playoff end of it, the players are definitely more up for that than the regular season end of, because it gives them more of an opportunity for winning the championship, which everybody is in this thing for, in theory. So
yeah, it also gives them a chance at one of those. I know they're not as good as a regular season check, but they give them a chance at a playoff check too.
Right, right.
Yeah, you go and you get bounced 40-2 in the first round. Yeah, you're still cashing a check for that.
Exactly. So that's certainly a factor in it. And the 17th game of the regular season, because that is guaranteed work, that is definitively going to happen if you add that, but then it is also the guaranteed wear and tear on the body. It does put the players in a position where they need to make sure they're getting compensated at the proper level, even specifically just to the extent of guys who already have contracts. Like, let's say, as the discussion was, that this would be something that would happen for this coming season. If that was going to be the case, you have a lot of guys who obviously have contracts going for years beyond 2020, or even if it didn't start till 2021, you have guys who have contracts that go years beyond that, that their contract is based off of playing having a 17-week regular season and playing 16 games over that time. And so to be compensated properly, the additional monies that would go to those pro-rated players who already have a deal, yeah, you certainly wouldn't want the same amount of cash divided amongst 16 games because you're playing in extra games. You don't want to add a free game to your current contract. You want to add the proper level of money.
You know what? I really enjoyed doing this, and it's such a rush to go out there. And I know I did it for 4 years on Saturdays, and I did it all through high school, and I played, and I waved to the crowd, and I loved the excitement of it. I think I'm going to do it for free at the NFL
level. Get a freebie.
You've earned that, billionaire owner.
So that's certainly something the players don't want to happen by adding the 17th regular season game. Will Perdue asked me the question we were in transition the other day. Would you be willing to play? I think the way he phrased it actually was, would you want to play a 17th game? And I certainly want to and be willing to are two different things. The want to, I mean, guys want to play the game anyway, but once you become a professional and you know that there's a level of compensation that your talent provides for, that you don't want to add that for free. So would I be willing to play the 17th game, as we kind of discussed it back and forth? Yes, to me, it's not a non-starter to play a 17th game, and that this is how the players are viewing it now from guys I'm talking to. It's just more about making sure the compensation, not just even for that additional game of the regular season, but how the older guys like myself, you know, with my pension and post-career health benefits, the potential to say that, you know, a lot of folks don't even realize right now, people just kind of assume that health insurance is there for all professional athletes forever. It's not how it works with football players. You know, once you get vested, it was previously essentially 4 credited seasons, which is 3 years and 3 games, 4 credited seasons. Then you do get vested at that point. You get your health insurance for 5 years after you retire. Then from there, you know, it's up to you. You know, you got a job that provides health insurance. You pay for your own health insurance, whatever the case may be. And of course, the level of the physical toll that football takes on us has obviously been in the news cycle plenty. So we know there's health coverage that's going to be necessary beyond that period of time. So that's one thing that's a big part of the discussion as well, to see how much more guarantees can be placed in the contracts, making sure the guys who are currently under contract will be compensated properly for that 17th game if it gets added, and how the post-career benefits will end up working out with things like pension and annuities and health insurance that players are trying to see if they can get it, where the longer guys in the league, then the more potential there is for those individuals to be able to maintain health coverage afterwards, because the level of injuries, I mean, you know, I think I've recounted all the surgeries I've had to you at points over the years, the left shoulder, both knees, the foot, the hands, and the back. And, you know, it gets pretty expensive to have these surgeries over and over again. And there's more surgeries I have on the way. And I'm just a guy who played in the league 5 years. I'm not even one of these guys who played in the league for a decade. But I had my fair share of surgeries, and there will be more to come on my lower body. And, yes, it would be nice if, you know, I'm obviously working here for a reason. I wasn't a guy who just retired to a yacht somewhere, but I made some money while I was in the game. I'm doing fine outside the game, but surgeries are expensive. So to feel like that is compensated in a way that my health insurance can help pay for that, to the very expensive procedures I have on the way, yes, I think that is worth fighting for.
Well, and it's going to be timely sponsor right here. Segment brought to you by Illini Care Health. Yes. You deserve quality health care. Choose Illini Care Health for health care coverage that includes free gym memberships, after school care, school uniforms that either you or your family can take advantage of. Visit IlliniCare.com today. Illini Care Health is a Health Choice Illinois plan. So I see it that way. I get entirely where you're coming from there, because hospital bills, you start living without health insurance, mm-hmm. and for yourself, for your family, it's an insane way to live, and I did it for far too long after college before getting a full-time job. I think there was a 4-year window there, maybe a little bit longer than 4 years, that I played the, all right, not going to the doctor this year. Why is that? Why am I not getting a checkup? Because I can't afford to pay for it.
You've run the full gamut at this point, though, because back then you were like a young, virile guy who felt like you were impenetrable and nothing was going to happen, so you could get by with no insurance. Then you got the insurance, you got the full-time gig, kind of let yourself go for a couple of years, kind of had the Shep belly happening.
Oh, yeah.
Now you got Peyton, You've been running marathons. I'm just going to
put
a
marathon. I'm Let's not make it plural it. Yet. Let's not make it plural yet. There. Yeah, you're trying to sign me up for a second one, is what you're doing. I know your game, boy.
You know, you lost the second chin there last season. If you're going to stay in this kind of shape, you might as well run another one.
Yeah, well, I have to go the long runs. I've done some shorter runs and stayed on the elliptical a decent amount. I haven't done the long run
Have the
thing.
Joints recovered yet?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's amazing, and not to get too far off course here, but the training plan that you go on, like it's built on, you pretty much kick the crap out of yourself all summer long. And then for roughly a month before the actual marathon, it's like completely refresh mode.
Okay.
And by the time you start running the marathon, I remember looking at my watch at the second mile being, I'm going too fast. I can't slow down. My body feels too good. I physically can't slow down.
Yeah.
I'm flying past the pace that I trained at because my body feels this good. And then you run the 26.2 and you're like, it all hurts. Everything's sore. I don't know which way's up. But yes, if you're going to sign me up for a second marathon, I don't know if I can commit to it this year. Having the newborn at home is a little bit tough.
That matters.
Time-wise, training-wise, but it's something I'm open to in the future. But back to the NFL a bit.
You're anti-postseason. You don't want any more teams.
I just don't want more teams in a postseason is the way that I see it. What are you really rewarding here? Okay, I know that people will point to the year that Tom Brady got hurt, that Patriots team led by Matt Castle quarterbacking them then. In 2007, they won 11 games. They didn't win the AFC East that year. The Dolphins did with, if you remember, the Wildcat that went crazy with Ronnie Brown. Was he the running back from Auburn?
From Auburn, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very high draft pick that the Dolphins took. Wildcat, and they beat the Patriots in New England with that. They end up winning the division that year. They go to the postseason. Patriots stay at home despite winning 11 games. You know the last time a team won 11 games and didn't go to the NFL's postseason? That 2007 Patriots team. It's not like this is a widespread thing that's happening all the time of like, oh, man, there's this Super Bowl competitor. There's this team that just dominated a regular season that's sitting at home. No, it hasn't happened in 12 years now. Going over the last 10 NFL seasons, here's your breakdown of teams that would have been added to the NFL's postseason had there been a seventh spot instead of six in each conference. In the last 10 years, five teams with 10 wins would have been added. In the last 10 years, nine teams with nine wins at the end of the regular season would have been added. And at the end of the year, over the last 10 years, six teams with eight wins would have been added. Like, I just look at it and, okay, your percentages you still would have if you're getting 14 out of 32 of the NFL teams making a postseason, you still have a smaller percentage than the NBA does. The NBA is over 50%. You still have a smaller percentage than the NHL. They're just over 50%. 16 out of 31 make it. You're nowhere near baseball. Baseball, it's five on each side, so 10 out of 30 total. So
basically, looking at only the defending World Series champ makes the playoffs. That's it. Nobody else is allowed to make the playoffs.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to win the tournament once they get there anymore. Yeah. That hasn't happened in 20 years or so. So you automatically disqualify yourself winning it. But I just don't see, like, if it was this great cause where there were all these teams that were, man, that was a real Super Bowl threat and they were dominating and they're sitting at home. It doesn't happen. It's not like this is this widespread, oh my God, how'd they not make the postseason? And they so fully deserve to be in. You're teetering right at 500. I mean, 15 of these 20 teams are 9 or 8 win teams. It's not like they're dominating seasons. It's not like they're, oh my God, how did they possibly not get into the postseason? Okay, 10 wins, you start to have an argument. Like, if it was happening with 11-5 teams on a regular, I'd be willing to listen to it. It's not. It's not whatsoever. It happens once every 13 years looking at here in the NFL. Like, it's not a common theme of these great teams sitting at home. And I just hate the idea of having to, just add a playoff game. And the people that say, well, if you don't want more football, you don't want more meaningful football, then you're an idiot. I'm not saying I won't watch it.
Right.
NFL playoffs are on. I'm going to watch it. But I mean, even use college football for an example. We sit and we argue and we moan and complain of, oh, college football needs to expand their playoff. Go through a college football playoff year by year. How many of those the semifinal games have actually been compelling? You had maybe the best one to date in Clemson and Ohio State this year. Do we need more teams of Oklahoma's level playing against LSU and that 55 points or whatever they put up in the first half this year?
Nah.
No. Do I need more Notre Dame versus Clemson matchups or Oklahoma versus Alabama matchups from the year before? No.
Goodbye
without really that. Could really live without that. Do I need to see Michigan State and Alabama from a few years ago? Do I need more of that?
Just threw up in my
no,
mouth a little bit.
No, I don't. I don't. Just expand the playoffs to get more football. Okay. You're expanding maybe an argument. You're not expanding a bettering of a brand.
The Super Bowl participants, it's turned into where, for the most part, it's the one seeds that end up making, you know, and really those top two seeds in recent years is where the Super Bowl has come from. There was a stretch there where you were seeing, you know, the Roethlisberger-led Steelers or the Eli-led Giants, you know, coming from that six seed or five seed and kind of, you know, coming from the depths of postseason acclaim to make a run at the Super Bowl. That doesn't happen really so much in recent years. But I do think, and part of this is just kind of the standard that you have set in your head for, I don't know, what deserves a chance at the title. And I do think we've come accustomed to in football where at least whoever's in the playoffs will have a chance at the championship. And, you know, because it is this one-game single elimination deal, you don't see, like in basketball, seven-game series, you very rarely, if ever, see where the eighth seed will beat the one seed. What's it happened once or maybe twice now?
Handful
in NBA
of times.
History,
happened to the Bulls when Rose and Noah both got hurt to the 76ers. Dikembe
right,
Mutombo's team
count,
beat
yes,
the
Mutombo's team.
And the Warriors over the Mavericks that one year was huge too.
So to have that occur in a seven game series is super infrequent. In football, you will see the lower seeded team end up beating because it's so much about matchups and about health and about who gets hot at the right time. And just in that single game format, then something can happen. So it feels to me more acceptable in football if you have a lower seeded squad, a squad that just got by it at 9-7 or 10-6, which is, I mean, you know, 10 win season in the NFL is a really nice season. And like you referenced, there's a handful of those squads who've had 10 wins here over the last decade who didn't end up making the playoffs. Now, if you're talking 8-8, then yeah, I can see where that is just the sheer line of mediocrity. You weren't that great. You weren't that bad. You just kind of got by this past season's Bears making the playoffs, having a chance at the Super Bowl. Would have been nice for Chicago fans, but I don't think we look at that Bears season and say, man, that was a team that deserved to make the playoffs. They should have had a chance at the Super Bowl. But to me, once you're starting to get into that 9-7 and certainly the 10-6 end of the discussion, I get it. Where and overall, there's more teams who've had winning records who would have been this seven seed over the last decade than teams who just finished at 8-8. So I think there's a compelling discussion to be made that it makes sense, and especially by comparison to the other sports you're referencing, where over 50% make it in the NBA, over 50% make it in the NHL, and baseball is just kind of the outlier where they basically don't want postseason baseball. They basically just want the World Series, and that's it. Beyond that, I don't know why folks have a problem with the thought of continuing to expand the baseball playoffs. It's the most fun part of the season. It's why the NBA playoffs are as long as they are, because that's the most fun part of the NBA season.
Because you're told that's the most fun part of the season. We have to pause for a timeout. I have speaks to be had with you coming up next. Scott Merkin joins us from Sox Camp at 11 as well. I have some things I have to discuss with you in regards to that. He's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. It's The Score. And that's why I have to wear a certain brand of baseball hat,
that
and that specifically. Welcome back in. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. 10 minutes from now, we'll check in White Sox camp. Scott Merkin, MLB.com, writer down there covering the Sox. We'll break down what's going on the first few days of White Sox camp. We're looking forward to talking with him. But Anthony tells me that baseball needs to get with the times. It's not a football argument of adding playoff teams. It's baseball's problem that they only let 10 of the 30 get in, and that the best baseball, the fewest teams get to participate in it. Tell me more of this stance, Mr. Herron.
Well, the postseason in Major League Baseball, I would say in baseball and in, I mean, really every sport, the playoffs is the best part. Now, in football, because the product, the content, the inventory in the regular season is so limited with only 16 games, then you rarely watch an NFL game and think, oh, okay, the guys just kind of mailed it in. You'll see a blowout on occasion, but you know, you have to put everything out there physically to execute at a high level in football. In baseball, even Javi Baez was talking about it, like, first four innings a lot of times last season, we weren't necessarily into it.
And
yet,
you saw what happened with them. Weren't into it. You didn't go to the postseason.
But I think in the NBA, we all talk about how the NBA season drags on. The baseball season, extremely long. Playoffs, best part to me, why not have more playoffs in baseball? That to me would make a lot of sense because to me it is the most compelling part of the season. Regular season is fun. There's just so much of it. You know, we don't need as much, but it's here. I don't think they're going to diminish from 162 games. Could they and still be successful? I think so. But it's not going to happen. But in the playoffs, it just makes all the sense in the world. I mean, why you wouldn't want more postseason baseball doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, my point to that is, and I think if they ever were to take away a schedule of the sports, if they were to take away regular season games, baseball is the one I think that would make the, or have at least the best chance of it happening, that you can take away a week's worth of games, eight games or so, make it a 154-game schedule like it used to be.
This
few
feels
more
like
days
the numbers
off here
are so
and
important
there.
In baseball, yeah. though, that they wouldn't want those to
and
be
And that
skewed.
Way you're able to get your rest in, because when in the old days, when you're playing your huge schedule, you had scheduled doubleheaders and you had rest days that were built in better than the schedule allows for now. So maybe that's something for down the road that possibly, I still wouldn't bet on it happening. Mm-hmm. I think baseball, my argument and my reason for not wanting baseball expansion to the playoffs is, and I say this, fully admitting, I love baseball playoffs. I think you're right. I think they are. Some people will tell you hockey's the best. So whatever your favorite sports are, you're going to say that's your best postseason. Well, you're a diehard hockey fan. Oh, nothing like overtime and Stanley Cup playoffs. If you're a baseball fan, oh, man, baseball playoffs and the way bullpens are used, there's nothing like it. Basketball, oh, man, when NBA players start caring there once
right.
April comes
Finally
around,
there's
nothing like it when you got that going on. It's every person is going to say whatever their favorite sport is the best postseason. March Madness fans will say that, too, or college basketball fans will say it about March Madness, too. With baseball, I can admit that it's exciting, it's riveting, it's pitch by pitch, it's bullpen usage, it's lineup usage, it's, oh, my God, are they going to a pinch hitter here? Are they lifting this pitcher here? All of it. And there's a microscope on top of it. But I can also say that it has the worst representation of finding out about your sport or who your best teams are than any of the sports. Baseball as a game is just built on sample size. And it's just, it's played 6 months long and it's a long season. It drags on, but it's played that way for a reason. Because at the end of the regular season, you know more things definitive about your sport than any other sport does. You know that, oh yeah, Dodgers won 105 games this year. That is a damn good team, and these players are great players because they've done it again, again, and again. And each time you shorten up or at least limit the importance of that, and you simply just say, oh, you get to play three home games instead of two in the opening series. Congrats on your 105 wins. It's just you're leaving it up there for variance in a sport that is built on, I think the foundation of baseball is, that it's not a sport that if you're trying to find the best champion and the most deserving champion, that the baseball playoffs and expanding them and making it another 50-50 play-in game for a wild card spot or whatever it may be, then you're just adding more to that variance. And I just hate the idea of that because I think it's the one that's regular season, although maybe in the standings it doesn't matter a ton of, oh yeah, playing for playoff positioning. It not only matters to a handful of teams by the end of September, I just think that it is the one that you know the most about your sport in terms of who's good, who's bad, player-wise, team-wise by the end of it, than you do better than the other three major sports that there are.
But there, you'll see examples where there's teams who perhaps, you know what, they got a couple of hot starting pitchers, but it just that wasn't enough to sustain them and make them a 95-win club. But man, if this squad makes the playoffs, though, and they got a couple of hot starters and one really good closer, you can win a baseball series doing that in the postseason and get by with that. I think we saw the D-backs did that when they had Schilling.
Randy Johnson
and
Schilling.
Right?
Yeah,
like overall, that whole squad wasn't necessarily stellar, but as soon as Schilling or Johnson took the mound, you knew that team had a shot at winning. When they weren't out there, their chances went way down, but if one of those guys was on the mound and then they could return for a game to maybe do some relief appearances or something, they put together a championship squad with that. And it doesn't feel like, to your sample size point, like, okay, so that team wins the championship even though they didn't feel like the best team in baseball, but they had that championship opportunity, and that formula gave them the shot to win the World Series.
Yeah, and they also, I mean, at the end of the year, that was a team that they earned that playoff spot when it was even harder back then when you're making four teams aside make the postseason instead of the five that do it now each league. We have to pause for a timeout. It's Nick Schapkowski, Anthony Herron. We check in White Sox camp with Scott Merkin of MLB.com next on The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or
I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.